Welcome to Trine Days, The Journey, Conversations with publisher Chris Milligan. I am Bruce DeTauris, and with us is author S.K. Bain, and we intend an end of 2023 kind of year-end review. And now, Chris Milligan.
Well, thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Kent, for coming on here with us. And life is awful interesting, and we go down the road and we see things, and we look back and we see things, and we look forward and we see things. And it's a mighty interesting journey that we've all been on and continuing on. And I started this journey a long time ago when my daddy told me some things I didn't understand and was trying to figure those things out. And as I was going along this journey, after he told me these things, I found very few people I could talk to, and it's taken a long time. But now, there's a lot of people talking about conspiracy theories. And as I've mentioned before, one of the first things I did was in the early 70s was take on conspiracy theory as an intellectual discipline to look at it and to see how it affects the world. And it's a very wide discipline because it encompasses the occult, it encompasses economics, it encompasses history. It encompasses just a wide range of topics on there. And then, like I've said many times, one of the first things that I learned was that a conspiracy theory doesn't have to be true to have an effect. One thing that I started to study early on was rhetoric and I guess a thing called semiotics. I can't really say it right, but because the way that language is used really tells a lot about what a person is trying to say, because you can have rhetoric that tries to inform people, or you can have rhetoric that tries to influence people in particular ways. And we're really coming to a I think we're in the midst of a paradigm shift, and when those things happen, you have, a lot of people on one side of the paradigm shift that have a lot of power and different things, and they want to make sure that after the shift happens, they continue in those power situations. But in looking at history, and again, some of my favorite books, Generations: A History of America's Future, and then their later book, Fourth Turning, show that when these paradigm shifts happen, it's quite revolutionary, evolutionary, and there's a lot of change that happens. And it's shown in history that as much as people have tried to survive paradigm shifts and make sure that they're in power after them, history doesn't really bear that out. So we're in a very interesting flux time, and it's been my contention that this what I call the secret societal level, or you could call it a cult level, whatever you want to call it, okay, has been above the sovereign nation level, which is the next level. And you could see where the secret societal level really dug its hooks into America and a couple other places, and was in very much, increasing their control. And then when the internet started to come out with all this information, it started to dilute their control, because the secret societies have to operate in quote unquote in secret to and have their plans come out to be the most effective. And I kind of look at them as a one of those big transformer robots. You got somebody in the head, controlling things, and then it goes down to the fingers, and these are like people, and they have to make sure that those people at the end of the fingers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And their control has, as far as I can see, has languished. And what that ends up with, we end up with criminal gangs, kind of, okay, coming in and taking in the slack in between the secret societal level and the sovereign countries, because these secret societies have used these criminal gangs for some of their operations. And then it also boils down a lot to the drug trade, okay, because the drug trade creates big, huge cash piles that have allowed these people in the shadows to affect our world. At one point in time, you had, you know, a couple of people that were accumulating piles. Well, you know, starting in the 60s and 70s, a lot of other countries started realizing that, oh, well, my intelligence agencies and my diplomatic corps with their diplomatic bags, some of them as big as, you know, sea bags, you can move some product and create some money for whatever your agenda is. And another thing that I find that these secret societies do, oh, they're like a puffer fish. They blow themselves up really big and look very, very threatening when they are threatened. But, you know, a lot of times their power is really just virtual. Again, I'll go over again my Leviathan of how the secret societies run the world. It's a Leviathan of three levels, you have three parts in each level. The top part is mining metal and money, okay, and they hold that very tight. And then you have a very robust area. A lot of activity happens, drugs, guns, and oil, okay? And then where this meets the road is media, movies slash music, and then quote-unquote magic. Their ability to do these mass trauma rituals to keep us in line and to threaten us. You know, it's like, well, you know, if you don't go along with the program, well, hell, you know, we'll do stuff like this. And so, you know, we have these veiled blackmail threats from these people in the shadows. And, you know, I'm very hopeful, even though, you know, I see how conspiracy theory is being used to radicalize people, radicalize them, you know, against the United States of America and different things. But I still see the internet as a healing mechanism also, because we're able to, with enough information, I mean, it's just like, you know, you can read one book and get an idea, but, you know, when you read a couple more, you say, well, okay. And with the internet, we have, you know, the whole world is involved with the internet and you know, looking at this corruption and figuring it out. I mean, we just had a situation where I got an email from a lady who listened to one of these podcasts. She found something in there that added to her research, and then she sent it back to me, and it added to my understandings of things. And so this is a whole, it ain't just you against the world, okay? It's all of us for the world, okay? So, well, I might get off my soapbox here for a little bit, but, you know, Bruce, what do you think about what I had to say?
All these forces that you describe that are trying to manipulate things for their advantage, how much of the tiny percent of the wealth owners of the world are good or bad? Because our greatest strength might simply be the vastness of our numbers to overwhelm what the rich could do with their wealth.
Yes, and the thing I found is that, you know, in this journey is that the people in the shadows aren't, it's not all the evil people in the shadows. You have good people out there too, okay? But they're, you know, they're maybe stuck in a position where, you know, they can only do so much, you know, or they'll get, you know, slammed. As far as percentage, I don't know. I think it's a small percentage. I mean, I you know, you look at like Skull and Bones, okay? And you look at their membership list, okay? And you see that they don't just choose, you know, quote unquote, the evil people. They choose people that are helpful to them. Okay. In Masonic circles, you call them porch brethren. And so, because you have the, you know, the legacy members, okay, the bloodline members. And now, does every father in a bloodline member that's a member of, does he tell all of his children everything that he knows? Okay. Or does he just tell one or two or what? And, you know, just like mafia people, you know, say, okay, you know, I don't want my kids to get into the mafia. Okay. I want them to do something else. Okay. Or I want them to be a lawyer so they'd be helpful to us. Okay. But then do they always tell them everything that's going on? You know, I don't know. I mean, and when you look at different things, I mean, a lot of corruption. I mean, I'm dealing with a book about corruption in Florida. There's a bit of corruption in Florida. One of the main things going on is drugs. And then you have these multi-generational groups. Well, you have military, you know, you have multi-generational families in the military. You have the occult. You have multi-generational in occult circles. And then you have multi-generational things happening in pedophilia. Okay. So, because again, if you're trying to do a conspiracy beyond your lifetime, how do you control that? And then the other thing, when you look at it and when you talk, the Belgian state police report where they put somebody in and he went up to the top and there was a whole bunch of groups called the Order. Okay. And then the other thing that the secret societies have is notes. Okay. It's just like, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, intelligence and, you know, one of the main things that intelligence does is take notes. Well, just think if you're an organization and you'd been taking notes, say since the 1600s and you say, well, this happens here. And then, you know, that happened. So you have all these notes about how, what you did and what it befell. And then, you know, they became very operational. And it's like, you know, the 9/11 and the Kennedy assassination, as far as I'm concerned, were both ritual crimes. Okay. Ritual sacrifices. And you look at the basic structure, physical structure of them. And when did that start? Well, basically in the 1930s, okay, of building the buildings and getting the area in New York to have, you know, this ritual sacrifice, you know, through Rockefellers and other people like that with money. And then again, in Dallas, okay, the setting up of the kill zone there, the Trident thing, you know, because these things had to be physically built. So you have that type of structure in it. And then again, you know, when you look at the Masons and Secret and Skull and Bones, they don't tell everybody what they're doing. They just, you know, they manipulate them into position so that they're helpful, or if they aren't helpful, at least they aren't going to harm them.
I want to circle the theme inside all you're talking about, which is invaluable. They are not monolithic. They do puff up like puffer fish. And that diffuses the argument of you can't fight City Hall. That creates a space for me and others to feel very challenged, like, wait a second, if I actually could be effective to restore and improve my level of freedom and the hope of a good future for my kids, holy stink, I have to change my habits. I have to actually try to do something. And maybe that's a good position to invite Kent. In your comments, Kent.
Yeah, I basically have the same perspective as both you and Chris, and you have a very successful book in your own right, Bruce, and I know you're probably working on others and a podcast, and Chris has hundreds of books under the Prime Day imprint, and so doing what we can do and what we feel is effective, you know, do our little part is... it's what everyone needs to do, regardless of what that is. And, you know, in my instance, I've authored 4 books and hope to author more, and certainly hope to put those out through Trine Day and work with Chris. The, you know, that's been you know, he's allowed the fulfillment of a, you know, what I feel to be a calling, but then also it's been incredibly rewarding for me. I learned so much during the process of researching and writing a book and then preparing it for public consumption for the readership. And so that it's, you know, nobody needs to be under the illusion that any of this is easy or that it will have an impact quickly. And if you're, you know, if that's going to be your approach, you just need to go get some vitamins off Infowars.com and then go about your business. But if you really want to make a an impact, it is a lot of hard work, but it's worth it. You know, you never know how many people you're going to reach or what impact it's going to have. And you just have to trust that part of it. Do your best. And, you know, best writing, best thinking, and then, you know, work to the greatest extent to get your message out and have it heard and have it reach people. But yeah, it's it has to be a calling, because if you don't have passion for it, you will never make it through all the steps necessary to get your message out.
Well, Kent, this is the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, and what else happened this year?
So much that I'm sure, like myself, you could barely keep up with all of it. I have not blogged this year. Just, we were talking earlier, you know, I could have done a blog every other day or every week, certainly. And there was so many things happening. And this is, you know, if any of your listeners have followed my work, it's, you know, this is the great shift, the great reset, the dawn of a new great age, 26,000 year cycle procession. And this is year one. And all of the things we have seen kick into high gear, from the war in Ukraine to the conflict in Israel, all of these things are taking place at the same time by design. You know, the world economy sits on the precipice of collapse, or certainly transformation into a digital system, cyber currency. All of the shoes that are set to drop, or bubbles that are set to burst, they're just too many to count. And everything is set to collapse or implode at this particular moment for a very strategic reason. And you referenced the importance of the internet. That could well be the avenue of choice by which they implement their new technocratic world order.
I'd say try to, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, I would hope that they would not be successful. Some of the more interesting theories that I've heard, you know, a cyber approach to collapsing the world economy, you know, a threat to the world banking system that will necessitate the implementation of a Web 3.0. That's an interesting possibility, you know, scary hypothetical scenario. And then the idea that, you know, artificial intelligence could play a role, and not, you know, there's AI that's used for a variety of purposes. And then there's general artificial intelligence, more broadly defined, a broader initiative to create a truly godlike intelligence that can control anything and everything, and can out strategize humans by, you know, factors of hundreds. And one of the theories I've heard is that one or more of the major corporations that are working on that, you know, to keep a, what they call an air gap between the AI systems and the internet, so that there won't be any major disasters. And so one of the theories goes that one of the, you know, Google, Alphabet, one of the major players will, without telling anyone, hook up their general AI to the internet, thinking that they've worked out all the bugs, and just doing a test before they had actually announced that they're going to close that air gap and to connect the GAI to the web. But they will go ahead and do it, and then it will take control of the internet and compromise every system, necessitating a complete shutdown and a reboot of a Web 3.0. Now, whether that happens or whether they just fake that, false flag that, that's a very interesting scenario. Just, you know, because the threat to humanity from AI, and general AI specifically, has been so heavily touted in the last year.
Yeah.
they that you know, if you look at foreshadowing predictive programming, the threat to humanity from AI, general AI, invasion from the skies, I mean, those are some of the big threats they continue to and plug on a daily basis.
Yeah, they continue to scare us. I mean, you know, we have the information from Braun's secretary, you know, first it was going to be, you know, the commies, and then UFOs and aliens, and then, you know, astronauts from space to scare us into to whatever. And I really think that, you know, they're continuing that mode. Again, they're a puffer fish trying to scare us into mode. Now, I just watched a big, I don't know, it was a couple hour long video about worldview warfare. And, you know, it was talking about AI and stuff like that. And it had an agenda in there. Okay. It was trying to say that it didn't have an agenda, and it was and it was really funny in that it was using a lot of AI in the video, and then saying, you know, you better worry about AI. And then also this big worry about digital currency. We're going to go to digital currency, and then they're going to have you by the short hairs. Well, I just find that really spacious, okay? And I find that to be a real bugaboo that they're using, just like, you know, I mean, it's meme warfare. It's continuing meme warfare. It's just, we don't have universal health care here because of the meme. Oh, that would be socialized medicine. And oh, your world's going to end. Everything's going to be bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. The commies are going to come in. Okay. And I really see this digital thing as the same thing, because right now, almost all the money is done digitally. What they're saying, okay, well, if you don't have this, you won't be able to live. Well, shit, we've got homeless people all over the place. Okay. We got people that ain't living right now. They want to stop progress. Okay. And only progress in the way that they're able to control. And they're able to control it by scaring people. Okay. And when you look at their big two things, okay, again, the JFK assassination and 9/11, and those things didn't happen, okay, because like some general got up and says, well, we got to kill the president in a couple of years. No, because the planning on these things went for decades. I don't know. I just see them losing control and using a lot of fear. You know, the whole COVID thing, and you know, everybody's supposed to hate Fauci and all of this type of stuff. It's all agenda-driven propaganda. At least that's how I see it, from the rhetoric that's being used. Because in the world, we have a world run by autocrats, okay? You know, Putin's been there for 2004. The guy in China's been there for a long time. And we got Trump out there saying, okay, you know, you got to put an autocrat in charge. You got to put a dictator in charge, because, you know, democracies don't work or whatever. Because the biggest bugaboo in their system, okay, is the American Republic of governance, okay, what they came up with.
There's a lot of people argue, making the case, observing all of the above, Chris, who fear that there's a very intentional examination, exposure of the corruption and the malfeasance and just incompetence of American politicians to help persuade enough Americans to think, you know what, this American experiment has failed, and maybe following some horrible catastrophe, self-inflicted or otherwise, to roll us over into thinking, let's try some international rule. Let's try rule by some international body, because they are trying to dispirit us about our institutions. I want to throw a couple things on the dog pile of things to worry about briefly, and then see if we can explore some solutions. A very real threat, as far as my studies go, are what the World Health Organization has planned and is moving very, very aggressively forward to expand their power and control over what member countries would have to automatically do when the World Health Organization says, threat of a pandemic there, threat of a pandemic there. I mentioned that just so anyone listening can really study that, because there's opportunity there, because there are windows open right now to pressure governments, individual governments, to examine those proposals very carefully and insist that, no, we don't automatically comply. And perhaps even in the United States, the greatest hope would be to force it to be evaluated through the advice and consent of the Senate so that we, the people, actually have a chance to weigh in on those.
I would go along with that. Because, you know, unbridled power, you look at the history of the Rockefellers, you look at the history of medicine, okay, and they've been very strong in there. And, you know, there is some good things from Western medicine, but there's also a lot of stuff that has been done bad to people through Western medicine. So, again, it's a discussion that needs to happen. And again, the way that we can do that is to get actual people into the People's House. And again, the People's House needs to be expanded. I mean, we're a big outlier, okay, as far as, you know, we've got one representative for so many people. You look at the rest of the world and, you know, it's not that way.
And you're talking about Congress with the People's House.
The control mechanism that, you know, these secret societies were able to, you know, to stop certain things, okay? Because it was one of the main amendments in the Bill of Rights.
And just looking at the length of our conversation already and knowing our kind of sweet spot length, maybe we'll go around the horn to explore what's hopeful or what's possible in terms of solutions. Is it too soon to enforce that tangent? Okay. Well, Kent, what are your thoughts along those lines?
We've seen a lot of predictive programming from the recent Netflix series that was produced and advised on by President Obama. That's gotten a lot of attention lately, and it's basically internal collapse of the United States by the elite. And there was a lot of conjecture about how much of that may be foreshadowing real world events. And then there's a film coming out in 2024 by A24 Studios, Civil War, and it appears from the trailer to paint a very realistic picture of what civil war in America might look like. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, is all of this foreshadowing real world events that are set in stone will occur in the next 12 months? Or is this part of the regime of fear that they keep constantly stoked to keep us all in a very submissive and an apprehensive state? You know, they want us to believe that physical collapse of the United States and its government is pending, and that there's, you know, we have to turn to the government to provide a solution to that. But moving into the new year, we do well to keep in mind that the fear factory is as powerful or more powerful than their actual projected physical power. And so we don't have to buy into the vision that they're trying to create. They're using us all as part of their parallel processing system to create the reality that they want. We need to focus on the reality that we want to create. And they constantly stoke division, racial division in particular. And we need to begin to reject that version of reality that they're forcing upon us and forcing us to create their world, their vision for the future, and spend more time focusing on our vision for the future. You know, the threat of civil war is certainly a serious one, and there are a lot of social woes and that you know, do exist, but is it going to lead to the absolute total breakup of the union? And I think we can have great hope that the reality of that actually occurring is much less than they would have us believe, and that by playing our part and refusing to play a role in their machinery, that we can not only avoid civil war, but create a serious resistance to what they're trying to do globally.
My grandest idea that ever helps me is that it begins and ends with me taking responsibility for what I'm thinking and feeling moment to moment. And that's all we can ever have or experience, and it's all we can ever give. So when I think about what's happening in the world, what do I want for the world? I want for the world what I want for myself, which is peace, which is the ability to love life, and which is the ability to feel loved by life, so I can trust myself and also trust what's going to happen to me hour by hour through every single day. And we have what we give. And this is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto yourself. I have very good days when I try to love and encourage and empower others, like a good mom and a good dad, so that I feel loved and capable. And I can attack my work with some enthusiasm, if not lightheartedness. And then there's tons we could discuss, and we'll do this on another episode, of how the nature of reality, if it's energy or spiritual or vibrational, those are no inconsequential feats. Said positively, that's how we co-create everything that we experience. So it's really about choosing, what am I going to think about? All the horrors that are in my book and yours and on my radio show, or using that as just motivation to choose intentionally. What am I going to think? What am I going to say? What am I going to feel? And what am I going to give in thought, word, and deed to anyone that I have the privilege of reaching with my voice or a post or something that I've written? We are very powerful. This is a loving realm. And now, Chris Milligan.
Well, here, here, Bruce.
Love God and, you know, with all your heart, and treat your brothers and sisters as your brothers and sisters. It's been said several times, and you know, to get peace, we need justice, okay? So we need to know about this corruption that's going on, okay? And you know, it's like, yeah, there was a plan, okay, to try and, you know, my generation, the boomer generation, we were supposed to be this peaced out, drugged out generation. We weren't supposed to come together, but we did. Because instead of running away from fear or anything, we just embraced it past what they could even think about. And that's what we can do as a people. We can go beyond their, excuse my language, BS, and create the world that we want to create. Especially, I mean, with the internet, is it's not just, you know, you sitting in a little hole somewhere. It's all of us together, all of us together, including, you know, goat shepherds in Kenya or anywhere, because they can have access to it and add something to what all of us are doing. And so, you know, like I say, I just am very, very hopeful. I mean, whether they say the darkness comes before the dawn. Okay. And so, I mean, we've got so much vitriol. You know, first off, there's an election coming up, okay? So we've got, you know, they're going to try and split us apart, spread us around, do all kinds of different things. I'm just telling people, you know, be very careful, like what I've always said, you know, don't be afraid to read things. Don't be afraid to listen to things, but be very careful on what you believe, because there's very slick ways out there to get you to, oh, well, and then you become a tool for them, because you become one, and then you fight the people over there. And while you're doing that, they're doing other things. And I'm going to, you know, strongly recommend people to read, you know, Sleeper Agent. Okay. It really, you understand things about bio warfare much more than these COVID deny. I mean, you know, I had somebody the other day tell me, well, you know, nobody died. Well, tell the people of there was a lot of people that died. It just, there's just a lot out there that people need to be careful about. And they always try and tell us another thing is that our vote doesn't count and all that stuff. And I say, you know, vote, you know, I mean, what else have you got? I mean, what are you going to do? Go around with a gun and try and make people, you better do what I say or I'm going to kill you. That's no way to live, you know? So onwards to a better future for our children.
Amen.
Absolutely.